Hello and welcome to the E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This podcast from the European Trade Union Institute offers new perspectives, debates and conversations about ongoing research and education on social Europe, workers' participation, health and safety, the wider labour movement and the world of work. This is E2I podcast. Hello and welcome to the E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This is episode 3, Social Protection and the Rule of Law in Times of COVID-19, the case of Latvia. Hello and welcome. I'm Elisa, Communication Officer here at E2I, and I'm your host for this E2I podcast series on Voices on the World of Work. Today, I'll be joined by Zane Rasnachap, a senior researcher specializing in labor law here at E2I, and an affiliated member at the Institute of European Law at the KU Leuven. Hi, Zane.
Hello, it's a pleasure to join you today. Thank you for the idea and the invitation.
Thank you for accepting to talk to us. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Sort of a mixed feelings about the lockdown, but it must be done. So keeping strong here.
And we will talk about it later on, I guess. Today with you, Zane, we would like to talk about mainly three things. So just to give a short overview, we will talk about social protection and what it means for certain types of workers nowadays in Europe under the current COVID-19 situation. Then a word with you on Latvia, because even though, I mean, we will be talking to you about this later, but because basically this is your own country, and the rule of law, because being a lawyer, you can tell us a bit more what are your views on what's going on, especially also in certain country, for instance, Hungary. So, social protection, what is the EU doing, and what are the instruments that already exist and that protect workers and that nowadays can be used under these circumstances?
So in general, the EU coordinates which social protection regime applies to workers. The EU doesn't set the standards. Those remain national. However, the EU basically determines whether, I don't know, the Belgian or German social security regime will apply to a worker. The basic rule there is that only one regime can apply. And typically, this will be the regime where the person works. However, it is much more complex for certain groups of typically mobile workers, such as.
What do you mean by mobile workers, for instance?
So, I mean, for example, workers posted by a company to install Windows in another country, or workers going to Italy to work in the agricultural sector during the harvest season to, I don't know, pick up fruit. Also frontier workers, people who work, for example, in Netherlands, but commute into Belgium to work every day. As well, there are workers who work in multiple member states. So for these groups of workers, the situation is much more complex and it's much harder to determine which social protection regime will apply. And it is becoming much more dire during this current crisis, because often these workers cannot easily cross the border anymore. They also don't want to, but at the same time, sometimes they're stranded in a country. So the social protection coordination rules at the EU level have become much more vital during this crisis.
And what is the EU doing in this respect for these highly mobile workers, as you call them? What is the EU doing now?
Yeah, so so far the EU hasn't done that much, but what the EU has been doing so far, has been going into one direction, into facilitating the continuation of the free movement and encouraging the member states not to close borders for these workers, because often these workers can work in critical sectors like transport, health sector, I don't know, construction, engineering, etc. So the EU has sort of issued a number of guidelines facilitating free movement of these workers. At the same time, the EU hasn't issued any additional safety standards which should apply to these workers. So there is sort of one part of the coin is still missing in this regard.
So basically, these workers can still cross the border. They can still, for instance, drive a truck across Europe, but nothing has been said on their health and safety in this time of crisis.
Yeah, more or less that way. So basically, the health and safety rules, they should apply in the country where they are. And what EU so far has said that basically the member states should apply equally the rules they are applying to their own workers, to these workers who are coming in. The problem though is that these workers are often not in the exactly same situation as local workers because they don't have permanent housing, they don't have adequate facilities, there is a language barrier, there are a lot of reasons why they should be more protected. So this is one thing what EU does. Otherwise, EU has done quite a lot in offering other kinds of help during the COVID, which go beyond workers.
And what are these other help that the EU is putting into place?
So I think the good story about what the EU has been doing is offering quite extensive financial help via different sorts of support for companies, via EU funds. There are special support measures for certain sectors like fisheries, agriculture. There is also direct support to the healthcare sector. However, I think for me as a labor lawyer, I think more interesting is the SURE program. This is the temporary support to mitigate unemployment risks in an emergency, which is the sort of the first program of that kind regarding unemployment reinsurance at the EU level.
And that is super interesting also from our point of view, because as you said, it's the first unemployment quote unquote benefit at the EU level. But how does this work basically? If you can tell us a bit more practically, how would this be implemented and what does this mean? If at all possible at the national level,
Yes, so it's not exactly a direct unemployment benefit. What it is a sort of a pot of money, 100 billion, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, 100 billion in loans, which is available for member states in order to fund their temporary unemployment or short-time work schemes. Basically, there are national schemes in place already currently in majority, I would say, of member states affected by COVID, which allow the state to pay, for example, state intervenes to pay the salaries for workers in companies where the work is de facto suspended. So basically, the idea is that person keeps their employment or is in the temporary unemployment, so called. The state pays still a benefit to the worker amounting to a certain percentage of the salary for the hours not actually worked. So it's not really direct unemployment scheme between the EU and the workers, but basically EU indirectly funds the national, sort of these national temporary unemployment schemes through this funding. That's the idea.
But that's a very good news and a very good measure that the US put into place. Now, you live in Belgium, Zan, as we said before. You are our colleague at D2I, but you come from another country. Can you tell us a bit more about your home country?
Yes, so I come from one of the Baltic states, from the middle one, Latvia. And concerning Latvia, the situation is maybe, I would say, less dire, or at least hasn't advanced so far as in some other countries, even though there have been around 550 infected people, there have been only 3 deaths and only 41 people currently find themselves in the hospital. So I think...
And what has the government been doing? What are the measures, specific measures that has been put into place regarding COVID-19?
Yeah, so Latvia responded pretty quickly with quite strict social distancing rules. And but when it but obviously it affected the situation affected labor market immensely and immediately, because a lot of business couldn't go on and a lot of workers had nothing to do. So and the government responded also here quite quickly and rapidly. So they have adopted this sort of a short time working scheme similar to those funded by European Project Sure. I think so Latvia is eligible for funding there, where they where for the companies which are in sort of a suspension work-wise or downtime, where they have certain income reduction in comparison to the previous year, they can receive for their workers a monthly allowance amounting to 75% of the salary. But with the ceiling level, though, only 700 euros per month, which is approximately the average net wage in Latvia anyway. So this is one good measure. Also, Latvian government now has expanded a similar benefit to all self-employed and owners of one-man undertaking, so these micro companies. And there is discussions for expanding the support also to people such as board members in small companies, because often, you know, you have only, I don't know, two workers and one of them as a board member, etc. So so the response has been quite good. More anecdotally, Latvia has adopted other measures, of course, also tax breaks and certain credit holidays. But more fun, I think, is the fact that Latvia finally has allowed ordering alcohol online. So that
at each his own way of coping with COVID-19, let's say. Like here in Belgium, where the fritterie were still open despite restaurants being closed. what can you tell us about the roles of the trade unions in Latvia? How did they respond? And if you can tell us a bit more, if you have also practical examples.
Yes, definitely. So trade unions have been quite active. They have been mainly active in sort of a tripartite level. So they have been quite extensively consulted, and actually quite a lot of what they wanted has been taken into account when these emergency measures and also these sort of a support measures for workers, self-employed, etc. were adopted. So that there was sort of a virtual working group at the government level that included representatives of the trade union. So that was very good. Basically, trade unions have been well involved in the policy making process. At the same time, there are at the sort of a more micro specific level, Latvia is quite interesting, because if you are a trade union member, in order to terminate your employment contract, employer needs an agreement from your trade union. So trade unions in those workplaces which are unionized, trade unions play quite important role also during COVID as sort of a putting a brake on dismissals. So that is sort of a good news. On the other hand, however, there are also less good news. Because what has been happening in Latvia are quite a number of collective dismissals in certain sectors. And probably the biggest and loudest example is our national airline company, Air Baltic, who announced, I think a week ago, that they will dismiss 700 workers.
Due to COVID-19, due to the fact they cannot fly and they're, yeah. Okay.
Exactly, due to the standstill of COVID. And what happened there was it's a quite illegal situation. So we'll see. I think it probably will go to courts sooner or later, because there was a collective agreement in place, which is completely breached. Now airline is arguing that it's not valid anymore. And what else? There was no consultation with workers or workers' representatives, and that is a unionized workplace, actually. So there definitely could have and should have been effective consultation, but instead, basically, the airline merely informed the trade union that we will dismiss 700 workers. And so the collective dismissal procedure is going forward. And since in Latvia, there is not an easy way how to declare, so basically, government cannot declare this collective dismissal illegal only on the basis of the lack of consultation. So therefore, the situation for these people is quite dire. And also, I was talking today with some people from close to the situation. And what is happening is also the workers are a bit reluctant to go to court for this because they are afraid that they will not be rehired by the company after the crisis if they now go to court. So it's the situation is quite quite terrible there.
Yeah, because they are afraid that their name will show up and the company will remember them. This is a classic, typical situation where workers need to decide
exactly.
what's going on with their future. Yeah. Well, let's follow this up and maybe we will have another talk with you in a few weeks or a few months, and then you will tell us a bit more what's going on with the AirBaltic, because it sounds like an interesting situation there. Now, on the rule of law, because as you said, you're a lawyer, and what's happening in Europe, and it's with the taking the implications of COVID-19, basically, lots of governments are putting into place lockdown procedures, and also making sure that with decreed laws. They're a bit hampering on power, let's say. What is your view? Can you tell us a bit more about if you've been following the news, for instance, from Hungary or from your own country, what's been happening and what is your take as a lawyer on all this?
Yeah, I think this is, a tricky time because obviously we are in an emergency situation, so certain emergency measures can be taken reasonably to limit the movement of people, etc. At the same time, certain governments or certain countries can have a sort of used COVID as an excuse of taking quite far-reaching measures, which go much further than necessary. And unfortunately for me, as an Eastern European, these countries tend to be Central and Eastern European countries. So Hungary adopted a possibility to completely bypass parliament for the prime minister and basically adopt whatever he wants. And he has used this to adopt, to, for example, suspend asylum rights. So Poland is adopting extremely restrictive measures without announcing any state of emergency. Because if they announce state of emergency, the presidential elections couldn't still go on. And this is quite dangerous because at least state of emergency, there is a presumption that will end someday, but other measures which are not under state of emergency, which is the case,
they can continue.
They can continue. And then there's a sort of maybe less worrying, but still from a human rights perspective, quite serious issue with derogations from the European Convention of Human Rights. So among the EU member states, Estonia, Latvia, so my own country, and Romania have derogated from certain provisions in the European Convention of Human Rights. And even though the convention actually already contains necessary flexibility to adopt sort of emergency measures related to COVID. So what happens in Latvia, for example, Latvia has derogated from the right to assembly and the right to strike. And from the article, which also involves the right to join trade unions. So it's quite interesting how it will play out in practice and what will it affect. But it is quite sort of a discouraging trend, I think, in this situation.
Yes, indeed. So this means that is Latvia the only country that was now taking these measures to opt out of several articles from the European Court of Human Rights, or are there other countries following up on what Latvia is doing?
So only Estonia and Romania so far have also done that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but it's serious enough because all these countries obviously do have difficulties with human rights at certain points, and it's quite worrisome. And there is quite I know that there are other countries in Council of Europe have been quite worried about that. And for example, the second right Latvia has now opted out is the respect for private and family life, which is the right which also contains privacy, etc. So which enables basically, yeah, enhanced tracking if necessary, etc.
Yes.
So it's quite,
yes.
Yeah,
that will need to be used if the state of emergency doesn't end. They could have been they could be used by governments by the government to track down possible. I understand.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and the problem here is also, I think, also to an extent, the EU response, because EU did adopt a letter to 13 EU member states.
Yes.
But that letter was quite vaguely formulated. And ironically, Hungary, Latvia, and Estonia are among those who signed this rule of law letter.
So 13 member states join in and sign this letter, where you also said that Hungary, Latvia, and Estonia now joined in. Can you tell us a bit more about this this letter that everybody's talking about on the rule of law? What does that say? And also then maybe a few words about what can the EU do on the rule of law, on the respect of the rule of law in member states.
So basically, this letter is a letter signed by 13 EU member states. It's not something EU has issued. It's not an official document by the whole EU, you know, by the Commission, Council, and European Parliament. And instead, it's only 13 member states, and then now more have added themselves as signatories. And the letter just generally condemns breaches of rule of law during this crisis we are going through. At the same time, unfortunately, it is very vaguely formulated and it doesn't contain any, you know, more concrete examples, doesn't name the member states which have difficulties, doesn't offer what they should do. So as such, this letter, obviously also not legally binding, is quite a vague statement at best. So in general, in my opinion, EU could and should and actually is obliged to do more, because EU also has, you know, human rights and rule of law standards embodied in the treaties and the Charter of Fundamental Rights. So EU is under obligation to make sure that the member states obey human rights and also rule of law. At the same time, EU so far hasn't really paid much attention to this. Obviously, other urgent things have become a priority. At the same time, it would be quite sad if a major backsliding regarding rule of law and fundamental rights happens in disguise of
which we are actually witnessing, and we will be reading soon about what Hungary is going to put into place, because they are going out this week with a new set of rules and measures that they want to take under COVID. So we will hear about it soon enough. From Hungary. Now, good news, Zane. Do you have something? This is a new part of our podcast where we want to share good news, because enough with the depressing news coming to us every day.
Well, I don't know how much it qualifies as sort of a good news, but it does for me. So for once, I'm actually quite proud and very proud of my own country's general response to COVID. It has been very socially oriented, very protective, and it's a completely different response than the one which took place after the 2008 financial crisis. During that crisis, we turned to complete austerity, a lot of dismissals, et cetera. Here, the government and, I mean, involving trade unions, they're actually doing a lot of good for workers, for people who are less protected. And therefore, I feel quite good about, you know, sort of saying, yes, actually, my Central Eastern European country is actually doing really well.
Well, that counts as a good news. Okay, that counts. And another final question about the lockdown. How are you surviving the lockdown?
Yeah, I think surviving is probably the correct word because we have a 2-year-old toddler at home. So it's quite appropriate term to use. I mean, it's in general, it's okay. I do enjoy the time with my small family. Although, I mean, we do miss actual social person-to-person interactions. But one survival technique I have discovered when my little family gets too much for myself is that I lock myself in the kitchen and make cakes. So I bake. I don't like cooking, but I do like baking. And so in previous week alone, I have baked a cheesecake, a chocolate cake, and 2 or 3 sets of cookies. So my partner actually has a birthday this week, so probably one more cake is coming up. So that's how I
But I can
survive.
share that cooking, both as an Italian and as a mother, is essential these days to keep me alive. And yeah, at least I have stairs in my home and I have 2 small children. So I bake a lot and I cook a lot, but at least also I move. So otherwise, at the end, by the end of lockdown, I've been gaining 5 or 10 kilos.
Yeah, that's basically the trajectory I am on. I am on at least 5 kilos by the end of lockdown. But it's c'est la vie, c'est la
Thank you,
vie.
Zade, for talking to us today about social protection for workers, especially highly mobile workers, the situation in your home country, Latvia, and what we'll be following up with also other research and with you, I hope, soon again, is the situation on rule of law and fundamental rights in Europe. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to E2I Podcast, Voices on the World of Work, with Zane Ragnasca. If you like this episode and want to know more about it, check our website, e2i.org, follow us on social media and on anchor.fm/E2I. Join us next episode when we talk about the link between climate change and COVID-19. How can one crisis learn from the other? And what are the interconnections between them? Stay safe out there. From Brussels, this is all. Bye bye. Ciao.